connection. It's a beautiful, sunshiny, warm day here in Illinois on April 7th, and everything is coming up roses and just peachy keen. Well, tonight we're going to continue on, as we have for the last few weeks in this last month, in March and into April, discussing about books and literature with different authors, and again, how this all applies to the military and recovery. Well, before we get to our guest tonight, Denise, I think, if she's on, is going to give a quick update on what our needs are in Washington, D.C. Denise, are you with us?
I certainly am, Doug. Our needs currently for the next week, Monday through Friday, is we need veterans, got four veterans, their spouses, their friends, their families, to make phone calls up to D.C. What we have is a Dear Colleague letter that was circulated on the Hill from Congressman Mishaud, M-I-C-H-A-U-D, and Congressman Rowe. And this is supporting us to continue our Gulf War Illness Research Program through the DOD Congressionally Directed Medical Research. And I have information on what the letter says, basically, you know, asking other representatives to sign on with them. And this letter, after the deadline, which is on the 12th, after we collect all the support we can get from fellow representatives up on the Hill in D.C., it goes to the Defense Appropriations and starts the appropriations process.
Appropriations, correct?
Right, appropriations process. And it's important for people to understand we compete against about 20 to 30 other programs over the Congressionally Directed Medical Research. So money's getting tight. So the more support, the more representatives we can get signed on, the better. And when you call up there, you got to call their D.C. offices, and you got to ask for the military defense person, not the veterans staffer, but the military defense, because they're the ones that will review it, collect all the information, make their recommendation to their boss, you know, and so we try to, you know, give them information of what will be helpful for them to know of what accomplishments we've made. And one of the most recent being the Georgetown study that came out on the 20th. So we are making headway. And it's important for them to know that we're making headway and that we are fully dependent on this funding, because the other research at VA has not met the bill for us. So I'm encouraging everybody to get on their phones, call not on only their own representative, but any representatives in your state, and tell them about the Dear Colleague letter. It was sent out on the 27th. They can pull it up, or you can go on my Facebook page. I have it listed there on the, you know, the thing that they sent out to the reps. And you could copy it and paste it and forward it. If they can't find their own copy, or they can call Congressman Rowe or Mishaud's office. But basically, they've pointed out the need for research for us to continue and to sign on and support this effort.
Okay, what is your Facebook page? How do they get to that, Denise?
All they have to do is plug in Denise Nichols, and on my timeline on the front, you'll have to scroll down a little bit. I'll probably pull it back up the end of the day today and put it back on the top. But it's under Denise Nichols.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Denise.
Thank you, and I'll hang around for a few minutes, but then I've got to run today. I can't spend the whole hour with y'all.
Okay. Well, our first guest tonight was a U.S. Navy corpsman at the end of the Vietnam era, and he was primarily stationed at Great Lakes, where he went to his undergrad and his basic training in Philadelphia, provided care at Camp Lejeune and then Newport, Rhode Island. David, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Doctor.
Yeah, could you tell us a little bit about your writing and the books that you've done and what it all means, and then go on from there, sir?
Well, I wrote Particular Stones. That came out about a year and a half ago. And I'm just happy to announce I have a new book coming out this summer, and it's called Cornerstones, and it's a sequel to the first one. Particular Stones is a book set in the future, around 3063, but it's a little bit different. I call it sci-fi light, because it's not the flying cars version of science fiction. It's more of a dystopia. There's been some natural disasters in the world, and the population has been reduced. So with that setting, then I have a my main character, Dan, is an orphan who finds himself stuck in this isolated community in northern Illinois, actually. And he's an orphan, and he begins to notice some bullies in the neighborhood bothering the kids. So basically, the Dan joins forces with some friends and forms the Eagles. And they sort of form this club to fight back against the bullies. But you see, as time goes on, a lot of group cohesion takes place. And it's really it's more than just protection. It starts to turn into like a family. Well, then there a riot breaks out at the high school, and they're blamed for it. Then they take off into the wilderness to avoid persecution from this riot that apparently they've been blamed for. And they get back to nature out there, learn how to cook over a campfire and things like that, and also obtain some growth, some mental growth, and come back and then fight for their redemption. That's the basic plot line.
Hmm. So it's kind of a growing up type of a book.
Kind of a coming of age, yes.
Wow. And what age of group is the book designed for or written for?
Well, it's listed as young adult, Doug, but I've had all kinds of folks read it of all ages, and it's just about, I think, personal integrity and redemption.
That's kind of neat. How did you, so that you got that book, and then you got particular stones, and then you said you've got another book that's getting ready to come out, Cornerstones?
Yeah, Cornerstones is a sequel, same characters. Basically, this is about Dan, who sets off to solve this mystery about his parents who disappeared out on the prairie years before. And it's a little bit more of a mystery, but also continuing with the particular stones theme of, you know, growing or coming of age.
How did you get involved or get ideas to write some books? What do you do normally or anything?
Well, I've always written. You know, I'm a local author, so I grew up in north of Rantoul there. And I was one of those kids you saw on the farm tractors driving up and down the fields.
Yeah, that's fun, isn't it?
That's where my imagination came from. Basically that, I have a lot of, a pretty close association with the military in both these books. Of course, you know, I grew up, you know, Chanute was there in Rantoul.
Yeah, Chanute Air Force Base, which was founded in 1917 and then closed in 1993, which is a primary training installation for the U.S. Air Force. I mean, during World War One, they trained pilots. I mean, as you know, and you've grown up here, the famed Tuskegee Airmen, the maintenance group, was founded and trained at Chanute.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, it was big in our lives there. My dad worked there. I dated a dependent daughter from the base. So, the military was closer to me than probably I even realized.
Wow. So you have some concepts and everything with your books and everything. So the concept of growing up and growing together and teamwork is key to both the books that you've written?
Yeah, and it's, I do, there's a few threads in it. One of them is I touch a little bit on science versus faith or spirituality a little bit. And I'm sure, as you're a scientist, you can appreciate this. and the need for a balance in our lives.
Absolutely.
It's also, they're about family. You know, a philosopher once said that the best way to determine the value of a institution in society is to subtract it from the world and contemplate what it looks like. And I think it was a good way to write about family by basically a group of boys that didn't have one. And during the book, you will see that the different members start to assume family roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, the coming of age thing.
Sounds really interesting. What gave you the idea to write the books or to begin writing?
Well, I just, like I say, I've been writing since I was 16, just as a hobby. And later on after the service, I went to college and wrote some there, took some writing courses.
Where'd you go to school?
Rhode Island College. I have a master's degree in personality psychology.
Whoa, boy, that could be important.
Well, that helped a lot with the writing. And then, you know, later on in life, I just had the time and decided, well, I'll give it a shot.
So are you a psychologist then by training? Or?
By training only. I was a counselor for a little while, and I didn't particularly care for that, so I basically got into human resources.
Wow. So on your different books that you've written, could you read an excerpt from particular stones or something? Is there something you'd like to read or discuss about the book or how the book has been used? I noticed on your website this book has been used for teaching, and teachers have been using it, and there's a whole series of questions and answers and things that you have put together to guide teachers.
Yeah, I did that for the educational part of it, and that's been very fruitful. It's a good thing to do if you write a book. Well, I guess I would like to read, if you don't mind. I have a selection from my new book, Cornerstones.
That'd be wonderful.
Now, as
Tell
I told
us
you
about Cornerstones.
Pardon?
Tell us about Cornerstones. What is it? And is it you said it's a continuation of particular stones?
Right. It's a continuation. It's basically about the main character and his missing parents. And he tries to solve the mystery of that. And then there's a little, you know, a continuing of the coming of age thing. And it's, pretty much a sequel.
Well, you had a really unique thing. I know living here in the Rantoul area now, since I got out of the military and came back after college, the Rantoul area where you grew up, I mean, families and all this stuff and communities have been very, very strong. I mean, this whole area all around here.
Yeah.
Which is very, very unique. Again, there's some, you know, obviously with the base, there was some transient, but for the most part, it was a pretty stable environment.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. Could you read some from Cornerstone and whatever you'd like to do, sir?
Sure. This is from Cornerstones, and this is Dan, the main character, and he is a few years later meeting, having a discussion with the head of the rival gang. It's kind of interesting. Sort of dropped their old street fighting ways, and they've learned to handle problems a little bit differently. But it's interesting because of what his foe admits. So I'll just start here. This is Dan talking. So he goes, "Thanks, Marv." Marvin is the president or the ex-president of the Mustangs or the evil gang. Thanks, Marv. Hey, can I ask you one thing about the old days? Why did you resign from the Mustang so quickly? He looked at me and smiled. Why, it was you. Me. Yes, it was you and the Eagles. You fought so darn hard. You fought it all. Marv, we were 10 scrawny seventh graders. You outnumbered us by at least 30. You were high school age and maybe even a little older. He chuckled and went on. I don't mean to make light, Dan, but your ignorance of the old days surprises me. We didn't have gang fights. We didn't fight at all. I was a rich kid with too much time on my hands and too little to do. The gang was my excitement. We took kids' lunch money. Can you believe that? Psych building was all we did. Dan, an enemy doesn't fear you for what you'll do to him. He fears you for what he thinks you will do to him. We didn't actually have to hit anybody. It was just all a rumor. But then you guys came along.
Interesting.
Okay, I'll just finish here. And it was funny. These 10 little 13 and 14-year-olds came scampering across the grass at us. We laughed. Then something happened. You stood up to us. We threatened you too much. You guys felt your lives were at stake and you were going to go down swinging. That's the day I decided to resign from the Mustangs. That's the day I knew somebody was going to get hurt if I kept endorsing our philosophy. Which basically the moral of that story is, don't make your threats too real, because there's nothing harder than fighting a foe who has nothing to lose.
Hmm. So how, I mean, you've got some interesting books, and again, you're talking about where people are coming together and working together, setting aside old rivalries and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems to me that's extremely important, whether it's going back to the 1960s or the 70s, or we're looking to where we are today with the kids and the different groups, aren't we?
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, it's something that's always bothered me, you know, this threatening, bullying, things like that. You know, a lot of it went on back in my day, and I'm sure yours. And it's time, I think, we need to learn to handle things differently.
What do you? I mean, you got involved in writing, so you said you started writing when you were very young, then you wrote, you know, after you went to college, and since then. Mm-hmm. What do you do? How are you involved in human resources and human resource management? Obviously, people are going to get out of the military. They're going to look for jobs. They're going to try and utilize the capabilities and what they learned in the military and how to get along with people. So how do you see all this tying together? I mean, obviously, what you said right off the bat, you know, you got the whole military theme through it and all, and then working together with each other.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the problems I ran into, Doug, was, and I wish Denise was still with us, was misinformation. And I remember one time I had a boss who thought that people in the military marched, they carried rifles, and they marched up and down, and they lived in foxholes, and they ate K rations. And basically, he didn't think of physicists, he didn't think of medics, corpsmen. What I found to be a major thing was the fact the, I wouldn't say ignorant, but I would say unknowing civilian labor force and how they view military skills. I don't think they have a full appreciation of them.
Well, that's a common problem. I mean, again, when we look at the information that's coming out here again, we're seeing throughout the labor force that there's the stigma, you were in the military, you have PTSD or everything else. From a human resources point of view, what can you suggest? I mean, obviously your books are putting us all together, putting things back into perspective and working together as a team, which is what the military is all about. But as a human resource manager, what suggestions can you give to the military coming out and how they tie it all together?
I think it's one of education and presenting a case. And, you know, it's one thing I used to see in my job was a resume, and somebody wrote U.S. Army. Well, you know, what does that tell me? It tells me a lot, because I'll look up their MOS code or whatever, and I knew that because I was in the military, but they need to spell out those skills word for word, sentence for sentence. And I used to help people with that because they didn't do a very good job with telling, civilian employers what they did, the exact extent of their skills. For example, I ran a radar station. You ran it. Were you a manager? How many folks did you have? What were some of the skills in operating a radar? I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, and then, obviously you were a medic in the Navy, taking care of the Marines, everything, and the main, basic training installations. And then I was a combat medic in the National Guard for a while also. So in the medical field, basically, if you go become a corpsman, you're a EMT in the civilian world.
Well, sure.
It's just a matter of sitting down and updating everything else and then sitting down and taking the state licensing examinations.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find your training as a medic in the Navy to be useful in what you did future?
Well, since I didn't go in the medical field, it wasn't exactly those skills, but there were a lot of other skills that people might not think about. I was a senior corpsman on a ward for a couple years. I did personnel evaluations, performance appraisals. I recommended for promotion. A lot of the things that a manager does that, again, someone sitting in a civilian personnel office may not have heard of. And those are the things they need to get communicated better.
How can individuals, you're obviously going to have this local author's fair here in the Rantoul Public Library coming up in a couple of weeks. And I know you'll be participating directly in that here in Rantoul, Illinois. Mm-hmm. How can people get copies of your books? Where are they available? And
Well, it's Particular Stones and any of the major online outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Albreas, Books a Million, all kinds, in several countries even. I've got a very good, my publisher does a very good job with this distribution. I also have a website.
Could you give that to us, please, very slowly?
Sure. That's just djkirk.net.
EJKirk.net.
DJ.
Mm-hmm. DJ. D is in Delta, J is in Juliet, Kirk.net.
Correct. K-I-R-K. And my books are on there. They're listed with my publisher, Martin Sisters Publishing. And shoot, I have a contact, and I do this all the time. I have a contact section on my website, and I just tell anybody to write me, send me an email. Readers, potential readers, or anybody else that just has a question, just write me an email. I answer them all.
That's pretty fascinating. So what else have you done? You've written Particular Stones, now you're reading Cornerstones. Do you have any other books that you're working on that you published or written?
No, I have one in the editing stage. It's a different book altogether. It's called In the Big Flood. In the Big Flood.
In the Big Flood.
I know, it sounds like a children's book. But it's about the river flooding in North Dakota, where we lived for a few years. And I wrote it's a novel. It's not nonfiction. And it's about someone going through a flood fight.
So this was along the Red River up there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, our next guest lived right along the Red River on Route 2, coming out of North Grand Forks.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, they'll know all about this flood situation. That's for sure. I hear it's up high again this year.
Yeah. What does your book talk about, then, the one that you got coming out with the Great Flood?
Oh, the great, that one doesn't have a home yet, but that deals with the emotional aspects of natural disaster. It's quite honestly a young gentleman, again, I'm with the coming-of-age stuff. His doesn't go so well, and he has some emotional problems connected with flood fighting. I think those interested in PTSD, for instance, would find it interesting.
So you've got some ideas and suggestions on how to get through PTSD and just work everything out in life. But it seems like all three of your books have that theme throughout together, how to work together, live together, and grow and expand.
I guess I've never had an outside person point that out to me, but you're probably right.
That's fascinating. Well, let's continue. Bonnie, are you on by chance?
Yes, I am.
Well, Dave, this is Bonnie. Bonnie, this is Dave. I mean, Bonnie, if you've listened.
Hi, Dave.
You just talked about the flood up there in North Dakota. I mean, you guys lived on Route 2 right along the river.
Yes, and people would fish on the road. All our land was underwater, and we would, and our yard, too, before they diked it. But we moved to central Minnesota, so we don't fight that anymore. But they're expecting a big flood this year.
Yeah, it's coming again. You know how it is to deal with that. And when you got that water lapping it outside your door,
yeah,
kind of scary.
We have pictures of the kids in boats in the yard. It didn't get very deep in our yard, but in the fields, it was very deep.
Yeah.
We were a mile from the river.
And there were times when that river was 10 miles wide.
Yeah, it is a big river, and sometimes it's beneficial to the farmers there. Sometimes it hurts them a lot, but depends on how much rain and when the rain comes and how it affects the crops.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize that river flows north. It doesn't flow south.
Right.
Yeah, it does. And then it's frozen further north, and it backs up more and more.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Doug.
We'll be interested in seeing you at the Rand Tool Author Fair coming up in a whole time. Well, thank you, David. Thank you very much.
I hear you're going to be there, correct?
Yes, I will be there also. Okay. Definitely. I'll be there.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, David.
Bye.
Well, and hey, I didn't have any idea that we were going to end up having a direct connection. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my distinct pleasure to have my cousin, Bonnie Rocky Tennis, join us now from Minnesota. Bonnie is a linguist. She was a school teacher. She was a psych nurse. She's an author, a poet, the whole shebang. Bonnie, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Well, thank you. I don't know if I should call you Doug or Dr. Rocky, but
hey, you
Dr.
Knew
Doug
me before,
Rocky.
You knew me
it's
before
nice to be
I knew
here
me.
Thank you for asking me that. It's an honor.
Yeah. It's not very often where I have somebody that actually knew me before I knew me. I mean, you knew I was coming before I was born.
Yeah, I guess I did. I remember all the good old days when you'd come to visit, and we had some good times.
Yeah, we sure did. You know, I mean, you've written books, you've written poetry, and I went and pulled out one of your poems, and I'd like to read it because this ties everything together very nicely on your books and our life as we grew up.
Okay,
to be 13 again, a whole lifetime of dreams waiting to be for one young girl full of thoughts of days to come. To be 13 again, running barefoot in the pasture and dancing in the wind under oak and cottonwood trees. We danced the polka without music, played wedding, and went to the prom in our dreams. Never knowing the pain of life, its wars and conflicts, its poverty, its injustices, life was good, and dreams would someday come true, dancing barefoot in the wind. That's a beautiful poem.
Well, thanks. I think I should have you read all my poetry, Doug. I like that one, too, because that was our life.
Yes, it was.
In the 50s.
Pardon?
The best time, a kinder, gentler time. We had some of the same problems, but it seemed that they were handled better, you know, in those days before the 60s came along and threw everything into chaos, but the 50s were good.
Yeah, that was very interesting. And when you talk about running barefoot in the pasture, again, we really did this because you grew up on your family farm, which was real close to yours and my grandparents' farm.
Yeah.
And so you and I absolutely did run barefoot in these pastures for sure and danced in the wind.
We did.
I mean, it was really, really, really unique. And this is up in the Newfoundland, Minnesota area, far northwestern Minnesota. Well, in addition to writing poetry, and I mean, you've got a whole bunch of poetry, and you do have a poetry book that's out.
I do. I took some of the nature poems, and I put them together in a poetry book, a collection of nature poems, and I have a whole bunch more poems all over that I should do something with someday, and I think I will, but I have to do one thing at a time, and it takes time to do that.
Yeah. What is the name of your poetry book? I know it's available on Amazon.
Yep, both. It's on Amazon, and it's my Margaret books and poetry books, No Presents and Other Poems. They're on Amazon in both printed form and electronic. And then I'm a Woman, I'm a Person is on Amazon in a printed form, but you can't use Rocky in it when you search it because you won't find it then. I didn't use Rocky when I wrote that so many years ago.
Yeah, I've got a copy of I Am a Woman, I Am a Person. Could you tell us about that book? That was one of the first ones you wrote.
Yes, I did a lot of writing when I was young, especially poetry. But then when I went to college, I did so much required writing, and then I raised my family. But in the 80s, I wrote this book, and it's really my spiritual journey to find myself. And it's Christian-based. And I really like it. It's a good book. And I found a box of them all still packed up in the original wrapping. And so I decided, well, I'm going to use them too now. And that was published in 1985. And I did a lot of speaking in those days. And it was fun. But then my husband had some health problems, and I ended up going back to school, and I got a bachelor's degree in nursing from the University of North Dakota the same year that I got my AARP card, and then I was in nursing, and we moved to central Minnesota, and I worked at the state hospital for many years before I retired.
Yeah, a lot of experience. I mean, let's go back to the other books, and I mean, I've read those, and we pass them out, and I know they're available, the Margaret series. And again, and this was really neat because I didn't expect this. I mean, I have you on. Obviously, you're talking about a girl growing up. David was just on talking about some guys growing up, again, in the same time frame, into their preteens, you know, the junior high into the high school area. Could you talk about the Margaret series? I mean, it's a fascinating, fascinating book series.
Well, I have three girls. The main character is Margaret. She wants a best friend. They're in sixth grade. This is the middle 50s. And I really tried to get the culture and the historical perspective and the time and the people right. They're fiction, so none of the characters is a real person. And it's based on the life then. And Margaret is being raised by her grandma, who is an outsider in a way in the community because she came from California when she married Margaret's grandpa. And so Margaret's being raised by her grandma and her dad because her mom had passed away when Margaret was nine, and they call her Pumpkin then. Grandma always calls her Pumpkin. And the first book, Growing Up Margaret, is about grandma teaching Margaret a lot about life, and she introduces her to all her friends, and Margaret wants some independence from her grandma, and she wants a best friend in the sixth grade, and she doesn't only find one best friend, but she finds two, and they fight prejudice and bullying and death, and their losses bring them together, and it's just the way people lived, and I thought that people would like to know that about the 50s.
Yeah, it's a totally different time.
And then I followed up by their seventh grade year, and it's more about the girls than as friends, but they reach out into each of their own interests and start to become individuals, but still have the backs of one another. And you find a lot about people, a lot of changes take place. Some people that were looked down on aren't looked down on anymore, and more people have passed on, and I even have a church lady in there, a church lady who goes and causes all kinds of trouble in the church, especially for grandma, because she thinks grandma is too worldly, maybe, because she's good to everybody, no matter who that person is. And during that Margaret Inc., that's the second one, and I used Inc. as her last name because she's kind of the boss of the crew. They're deciding what they want to be. You know, they're soon going to be in high school, and what they are thinking of doing. And some have some pretty impressive plans for the future. And that's Margaret Inc., and I don't want to give the whole story away.
Yeah, sometimes you just give enough. Somebody has said, and I've heard before, and we've had them other comments that I've read in the newspapers and other articles about this stuff. This is almost like a Little House on the Prairie thing.
It is, but taking place in the 50s, and it's hard for me to believe that the 50s would be historical fiction now, but they are, you know.
Yeah.
We're getting, as we get older, and, you know, in the small communities in those days, and I don't think the rural communities were any different anywhere else, whether it was Oklahoma or anything, you know, the change that came in with the, first of all, television, you know, it brought in so many things they didn't expect. And in growing up, Margaret, I talk about when they first have pizza up there, you know. They never had pizza. Maybe lefse, but not pizza. And so they liked it, you know, and they just kind of liked that outside influence coming into this Scandinavian community with the fictional name Norden. And it brought changes. And then when television came, it really brought changes, because that brought the whole world to them and us. You know, I remember watching American Bandstand, and I know that there were people who thought that was just terrible that I would do that, but I liked it.
I know all of us have watched that more time. I mean, the whole idea, I mean, today they've got computers and they've got the, you know, cell phones, internet. I mean, back then, the communications, you talked to the individual, you wrote letters to individuals.
I mean, and you walked a lot. Because we lived so far out in the country, we had our own little world out there, and that's where I saw this beautiful nature, because I was always outside doing something. And you could notice and observe a lot when you're outside and watch and listen and things like that.
Yeah, your farm was about 8 miles to the west in New Holden, correct?
It was, yeah, about seven. About
seven. Yeah, because where I live now, where we raised our kids, we're 7 miles out in the country also, so we're living on a farm now.
And we never really ever went to town unless there was a reason. I mean, we just didn't get up and take the car to town. We just pretty much had our little life there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad that our cousins were so close, because that was a great part of our life, of my life.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, the whole thing, and again, talking about this, we had our family get-togethers at the Old Mill State Park, which is just continuing farther west from your place, out past our grandparents' house.
Yeah, it's still there, but it's not as busy as it used to be. I can remember it being so packed full of people that you couldn't find a place almost to sit down. And everybody swam, and it was just a little hole in the ground with the river coming in one side and then out the other. But it was always clean river water. I mean, it wasn't stagnant in there, but, man, did we have fun there.
Yeah, that little old swimming hole.
Yeah, it was a swimming hole. But, boy, better to me it was better than any park swimming pool ever.
Well, how did you, I mean, you went through so many different things. Obviously, we grew up, you know, you're a farm girl, grew up on a farm up in rural Minnesota. We had a very tight family, a very big family, because both of our dads, there were a lot of brothers and sisters in our family, which was really neat. And your dad and my dad were both brothers. But how did you get the idea? I mean, you went through the whole thing. You left the farm, you went to school, you became a linguist, you were a teacher. Didn't you become a Russian linguist?
Well, I took Russian and I taught it for a while, but, you know, as I got older and didn't have the opportunity to, you know, speak it, I've lost some and I'd have to really go back and study. But, yes, I did teach. I taught Russian 4 years, beginning Russian, you know, because it's a very difficult language, but it's intriguing to me. And the reason I took it is when I was 17, when I registered for college and the Russian professor was there. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, and I said, sure, and that's how I got in it. Didn't think at all about it, but you know what? I'm glad I did.
So then you went into nursing. Obviously, you spent a long time of your career in nursing and psychiatric nursing and everything.
Well, what happened was I was a farm wife, or I can't say I was a farm wife. I worked on the farm, you know, and raised the kids, and the schools were closing when I wanted to go back. And I really wanted a job, so I started the 50-mile trek to Thief River with the LPN program every day for a year. Then I started the 2-year RN program. A lot of my credits transferred that I had before. And then I could have worked as an RN in Minnesota, but then I was so close to North Dakota, and they wanted you to get the 4-year degree, so I started taking classes at the University of North Dakota. And that's how I got my bachelor's degree in nursing, too. And shortly after that, I was offered the opportunity to work at Brainerd here at the state hospital, and I took it. And that was a good thing because I really liked that. I learned more about people there than anywhere I've ever been.
Did you have many military come through Brainerd there at one time or another?
Well, we have the armory here and the military. We have Fort Ripley close by. And it's all guard, but yeah, there's military in Brainerd.
How did you come up with the idea to write the Growing Up Margaret series? Because it's totally fascinating.
Because there were so many beautiful memories, and the time was so good, I thought, and I guess I had just observed so much that it was inside of me. I just wanted to get it down, and I wasn't getting any younger, and I didn't want to leave it in the computer, so I decided to print it. And I just wanted it for my kids, but people have really liked it. And I think it's good for anybody from middle school to old age, and anybody that grew up in that time will like it too.
Yeah, so it gets you a warm feeling all the way through when I read it.
Yeah, make it really positive, but teach a lesson about life, which I like to do. And even my poetry, I like to have a little lesson or kind of something to think about.
How can you, I mean, your books, they're e-books and they're on Amazon.com. You can get them through Amazon, and they're on what? They're in electronic book form also, aren't they?
Yeah, you could go to Kindle and get them, and if they're a lot more reasonable. You know, they're cheaper that way. And if you have a Kindle, in less than a minute, you can get it. And they're cheaper, but people, I found, wanted a real book. And so I thought, well, I'll just print a few and see what happens. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I want to do a third book, and that's going to be much harder because it's going to take them through the 60s to when Margaret gets married, and I don't know if whom she's going to marry, if it's going to be Annie Tollefson or if it's going to be David Genowain or somebody else, but I haven't figured that out yet. But I have a feeling if she doesn't marry Annie, people will be mad at me.
Would you like to read some from one of your books or something for everybody?
Yeah, you read the poem, so I don't have to read the poem. I had a poem picked out, but I'm going to go to Growing Up Margaret's the first one, mm-hmm. this, when they're in sixth grade and when she wants to get to find friends finally. And, you know, Grandma always was good to the down and out, and so she wants Margaret, or a.k.a. Pumpkin, to go with her out to the Genowain cabin, way out in the woods. They're down-and-out family that have been looked down on for years. People don't know them, basically, and the kids, most of them quit school early and left because they were treated so bad, and it was such a long road to get to school. And so Grandma tells Margaret, you're going with me to the Genowains. And she really doesn't want to go because she knows the kids in school will make fun of her if she does. But she finally goes with, because Grandma always brings a great big turkey and everything out to them. And they have a Thanksgiving, Christmas party. And here's the last of that chapter. It's called A Thanksgiving Gift. And this is how she meets one of her friends. It did not take long until the room filled with the smell of roasting turkey and sage dressing. While the food was cooking, Mrs. Genowain spread her new fall tablecloth of pumpkins and leaves on the table. She carefully set the table as if she was serving President Eisenhower or Queen Elizabeth. Everything was set in perfect order, according to Emily Post. Even if none of her dishes or silverware matched, it was obvious that somewhere she had learned how to be a proper hostess. We sat down for dinner, and Mr. Genowain asked us to bow our heads for the blessing. Asking God to bless the food and everyone present, he also thanked for the blessings of the past year, our friends, our families, our health, and good times together. Then he carved the turkey, and we ate our dinner prepared in an old wood burning stove. After dinner, Mr. Genowain, I'm going to stop here, but my editor said in those days we called everybody Mr. and Mrs. After dinner, Mr. Genowain appeared with a shiny violin. There was excitement and pleasure on everyone's face as he began to play perfectly Turkey in the Straw. It was magical, as if it was the spark bringing the glow to our evening. Next, he played Orange Blossom Special with his long, slender fingers flying over the strings faster and faster. Bridget came and took my hands. "Want to dance?" she asked. "Sure," I replied. We began to promenade, dance, and swing around until we were dizzy from spinning and almost fell down. When the song was over, we sat down exhausted and out of breath and giggled. "That was so much fun, Bridget," I said, almost gasping for breath. Once the dancing began, the rest of the evening was easy. Dancing somehow put both of us at ease. We laughed and talked about how much fun we were having, and we talked about school. "We should do this more often," we both said. As bedtime came closer, Mr. Genowain played the Vienna Waltz and finally the Blue Danube. It was magnificent. I felt sleepy as Bridget and I swung back and forth to the Waltz tempo. Did anyone else know Mr. Genowain was a talented violinist? If not, why? I wondered. I didn't know myself until tonight. "It's time to go to bed, girls," Grandma said. "We need to get up early to go home." Bridget and I slept well that night under her warm patchwork quilt, falling asleep, listening to Grandma and Mr. and Mrs. Genowain discuss art, current events, and Mr. Genowain's favorite music. Of course, there was the rest of their family. Grandma needed to know where every one of their children was and what they did. The loft was warm and cozy with all the warmth rising there from the fires. Grandma and Mr. and Mrs. Genowain, their conversation continued way into the night before they went to bed. Grandma made a bed on their old couch. The cabin became quiet long after Bridget and I fell asleep. The next morning, we awoke to talking, laughter, and the wonderful smell of bacon and eggs frying. Grandma, Mr. and Mrs. Genowain had awakened early to fix breakfast. Right after eating, we left for home. In our goodbyes, Bridget and I hugged each other and vowed, "Let's be friends and keep in touch. See you in school." On the way home, I turned to Grandma and said, "I really enjoyed myself, Grandma." "I know you did." "They're nice. I liked them." "I knew you would." "This is the best Thanksgiving I have ever had." Grandma just smiled. "She wasn't much for I told you so's." "Oh, and Grandma, is it true that Mr. Genowain lost everything in the Great Depression?" "Yes." "People around town say that that is why they are so poor and he is so sad. Is that the reason, Grandma? I really think so. Some people just aren't strong enough to start over from nothing. As time passed, so did his chances. Grandma, maybe Bridget will be the concert violinist. She told me her dad is giving her violin lessons. Maybe. Let's hope. Grandma seemed pleased. That's how she met Bridget.
Wow. So the whole series, I mean, when you're looking at things, the Growing Up Margaret, the Margaret Inc., again, you're taken from the early, from the 50s where two girls are growing up together with all their friends and everything they've learned and everything they've seen. And is there anything, lessons to be learned for today and how we live our lives today in comparison to what it was then?
I just think we have to care more about people and be kinder to people. There were bullies, you know. Margaret and her friends deal with bullying. They deal with race because Mary Elizabeth is a little African-American girl that the cafe owners adopted and brought, and she's the other friend. And they deal with prejudice in as far as money is concerned, and they deal with loss and death and the way people treat people, but it wasn't as violent, I don't think, as today. And people kept their mouth shut more, you know, because when you get into Margaret Inc., you know that there's a little bit of racial prejudice there, but it's not so blatant, you know? But people are alike in many ways today as they were then, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you got your three books. You've got Growing Up Margaret, Margaret Inc., and then your poetry book is what, Snow Presents and Other Poems.
Uh-huh. Snow Presents and Other Poems, and then I'm a Woman, I'm a Person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to do the third one, and then I should do more with poetry, and then I am working on a darker novel, but it's going to be so different from these, because it's, you know, it's about a crime. And my friend Victoria Hogan and I have been working on a picture book on the Circle of Life theme. And if I could only figure out how to put it together, I think I've written those two pages 300 times. I change something all the time. I think it's almost perfect now.
So when a person is starting to write a book, what suggestions can you give them? I mean, it seems to me like there's a lot involved in trying to get a book written, get your thoughts, your ideas, and everything together. How does a person go about doing that? Where do they start?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. You know, first of all, you have to want to and have a gift, I think, for it, observing and writing down. I think writing a journal is really good. What you see, you know, sometimes you get these thoughts. I get these thoughts in the middle of the night, and if I don't get up, and they're really good, and if I don't get up and write them down, they're gone. You have to write about what you know and how you feel. I tell you, when I got done with this Margaret Inc., I felt like I'd run a long race. I was emotionally exhausted even because there was so much feeling in it, you know? And to have a sense of humor and, you know, you don't want, that's why I don't like to go too much in negative, because I want to make people feel good and have hope. But I think you have to go with what you know and how you feel.
Yeah.
Unless you want to do a ton of research, you know.
Yeah, one of the things I think was neat for our family would be real happy with you. You got chosen as Woman of the Week some time ago.
I did. I was put on Dolly Howard's blog as Woman of the Week. She's a daughter of a granddaughter of a good friend of mine. And then I also was in Brainerd Dispatches. Her voice was a great article. The person did such a good job for me about my writing in last August. And you can go by, it's called Her Voice, the magazine's,
yeah.
Her Voice. And I was in there and colored pictures and everything. It's all about women in this area. And then
we're running out of time here. The music is coming up. Your books can be found under Bonnie Rocky Tinnis. Again, R-O-K-K-E, Tinnis, T-I-N-N-E-S. And they're on Amazon.com, and they're on Kindle also. Right, Bonnie?
Yes, and you can find me at www.BonnieRockyTennis.com, and you can find them there, too.
Well, great. Well, Bonnie, thank you very much. Thanks for coming on, and I know hopefully our other members of our family were planning to listen in, and I hope they enjoyed their interview. God bless you, and love you, Bonnie.
God bless you, too. Love you. Bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and we're again moving forward. The Progressive Radio Network provides you with information of all areas and education and opportunities to do it. Thank you, and God bless America.